David, whether you have a few weeks old puppy or a senior who's seen multiple decades, any dog person like me knows the most valuable thing in the world is spending time with your pet.
Yep.
The farmer's dog makes it easy to keep them healthy, which can give you more quality years with your lovely dog.
Yeah, well, I've heard Farmer's Dog makes and delivers fresh, healthy dog food. And, you know, that's what everyone's looking for. It's recommended by vets, nutritionally balanced. It's made from human-grade ingredients, safe, clean kitchens. All that stuff matters.
Yeah. I mean, you love your dog. Why get the lousy food for your dog? Farmer's Dog is the best. Traditional dry and wet dog food options are extremely processed.
Sometimes
they use
dogs...
much lower quality. Yeah.
you put it in their bowl and they go, what is this kibble? And they knock it away. What is this canned goo?
Oh, yeah. I've had our dog, yeah, look at the bowl and then kind of crank its neck up and look at me. And it was like, really?
They go, really? Why don't you go first? You want a bite of this? Slop?
And it makes that sound.
Here you go, dog.
So Farmer's Dog isn't just higher quality food. They also send the food pre-portioned specifically for your dog based on their unique nutritional needs. It makes it easy to help your dog reach and stay at their ideal weight, David, and which is one of the biggest indicators of a full, healthy life. A fresh diet has been found to have all sorts of benefits, David, from healthier coat and skin, better breath, if you want to kiss your dog, and even easier digestion and smaller and better poops.
Let's look at a clip. It doesn't matter if your dog's young or old, it's always the right time to invest in their health for more happy years with your dog. Get 50% off your first box at farmersdog.com/fly.
Let the Farmer's Dog know we sent you. Use your code or click podcast after you sign up for your first box.
So this week is Joe Coy, who is a good buddy. We see out, killing it out there in the stand-up world, selling out arenas and just really shaking it up. And sometimes what we do on the show is we take someone a little out of the SNL box and just... you know, we want to expand a little bit as we move along. And Joe is a great guy who is, everyone's touched in some way by SNL or the people on it. So he was a perfect candidate for that.
Yeah. He's become a superstar stand-up. And he talks about his journey to get the stand-up world to pay attention to him. A whole story around Netflix. That's you, Ted Sarandos, and his success. So it's a, you know, it's a really interesting story. He's a very likable guy. Lots of energy.
Yes. So. Yeah. Has a big following and very light in his feet. Very fun to talk to. And
great stand-up.
We think you will like this episode, so stick around.
Joe, do you remember when we first met?
Yep. And I cried.
That was very... I never forgot that. So Joe was opening for John Lovitz.
Hello.
John Lovitz.
In San Francisco.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Joe was his opener and unknown then, basically. And then when I met you, you got very emotional. I thought it was really sweet. I tried to understand it and take it in, but it was like, and then now I've watched you marching towards superstardom. So it's kind of cool. Could you
Dana,
cry?
Why are you crying?
I am right now. Why do you think I have these glasses on? I can't even look at them.
I was just talking about this the other day to my video guy, Josh. And I was just like, you meet people like it's hard when fans walk up and just say hi to you. It takes a lot. It takes a lot for someone to just go, oh, my God. I love your work. And sometimes we don't understand that, you know, because we're on the other side, right?
Yeah.
But to experience that with you, now I understand where my fans are coming from, because what you meant to me is the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing. Like when I was in love with Saturday Night Live and watching stand-up just every single day and watching you make me laugh and going to school and imitating you, you know, the next day imitating whatever bit that I saw you do.
Church lady, George Bush.
Church later, church lady, you know, everything, Hans and Franz, everything that you did.
Let me tell you.
But it was my escape from reality. And it was also like, I was going through such a depression with my family at that time. You know, my mom and dad divorced, my brother dealing with, you know, schizophrenia and going back and forth in the hospital. Like it was my escape. to just enjoy laughter. And I needed people like you and you know, Dennis Miller, Spade and everybody. And I'm not just saying that to say that because you're here, Dave. It's like, for real, like, and it meant a lot. And when I saw you, once again, like, the childhood came back and the emotions came back that I didn't know I had inside me. So it came out. It was just like, oh, here's my hero.
You know, and also, and you're now on the other side of the fence, but when I would meet people like Martin Short, who I saw on SCTV when I was in college, and I'm thinking, he's awesome. He kind of looked like I could be his cousin, and I want to do what he's doing. So when you see someone who is doing what you want to do before you do it, you always kind of are tricked out whenever you meet them. You know, there's like a hierarchy, and now you have people coming up to you that are getting emotional, and you don't understand, bro. You know, and it's very sweet, and you have to just take it in, because as performers, we're always thinking, oh, that wasn't so good, or I got to get better. You know, we're always have that self-deprecating side. But anyway, it was nice. But tell me about your divorce and the schizophrenia in your family as a
That's such a great transition.
Wait, I want to say I get starstruck too, and Dana, we all do, and I think that's good that we're not so jaded. Because whether it's in the comedy world, of course, the Steve Martins, the people you grew up with, Eddie Murphy, anyone from SNL I would see, and even like bands that mean a lot. And the hardest part is when you do get the balls to say something, oh, thanks. And you're like, no, you don't get it. And that's when people say to me, I try to give them a second or something, because I try to want them to understand that I get it. I don't even, but you don't know how to handle it on this end. When a McCartney, or I remember Jack Nicholson, and people go, have you met him? And I go, well, I've met him, but it's not met him. It's like shook his hand in a group, like, hey, this. And then one time got to sit next to him. And then if you talk, you really ultimately, selfishly, you want them to know you now from something and then like it. And then and if they light up a little bit, then that's the most fun. If they go, oh, I saw you, and you go, oh, and then it feels like a little more even than just like, oh, thanks. It's like, oh.
I think the key, and I've coached people about it, because they'll ask me, what do I do when I meet a celebrity? And I said, be very specific. Don't say, I liked your work. You know, say, Joe, in your second special, when you did your mom in this part, that me and my friends share those rhythms. We do impressions of you, and we're bonding over your comedy. That's kind of the ultimate compliment, right? When people are moved by your specials and your comedy and just share it. And want to talk about
it. I love that. I love that when I get it from someone that's like in the entertainment world as I am, and they say stuff like that. But I can care less if you know who I am or not. Like when I met David, I that was the first thing I said to David. Like, I love you. Like, because I mean it. It's like I care less if you know my work. I don't care. Yeah. It's like, you're the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing. I watched all your stuff when you used to do Annie at the Improv. I watched all your stuff, one in Phoenix. Like, that one moved me when you did the one in Phoenix. It's just like,
oh, right.
And it was just like I don't care. I don't need validation from anybody. I'm gonna tell you that what you meant to me is special, because there's things that motivate people, and there's things that inspire people. And if without those things in this world, that there. No one's going to be motivated to do anything.
I had the same thing, Joe, when I was guest hosting for Kimmel, and David was guest the second night. And I didn't plan this, but Quentin Tarantino, I'd ask for him, well, who do you want? I go, well, Quentin Tarantino. So then when he came out and I'm the host and they're all applauding for him, I just instinctively said, I love you.
Yeah.
Because I know you from your work, and you're speaking to me.
Right.
And I didn't know if I was too gushy or embarrassing, but to your point, I didn't care. This is just a visceral, emotional thing. So, well,
I'll do one more and I'll stop. But
no, I want to hear.
I was in New York, and we were just shopping, and then Chris Rock acknowledged me, had full on conversation, and I know this is your guys' guy, but he was my hero too. Like, you know what I mean? Bring the Pain was such a big special in my life. Mm-hmm. And when he acknowledged me, I didn't go to him. He came to me and was like acknowledging my work and what I do. And I was just like, wow, I was floored. I was like, you're the king, man. Like, what's going on right now? So That was a special moment.
That does mean a lot, though. It makes it all in your head. You're like, fuck, so people do see this shit I do.
Yeah.
Because you sometimes just do it and you get nervous and you move to the next thing.
Yeah, and it's lonely. Stand-up is lonely. Like, they don't understand how many hotel rooms we've seen and how we got to have that. We need that instant gratification, like the applause break and the laughter. That means, oh, okay, you like that. And then and then for some reason in the industry, we don't get like the same type of love or acknowledgement right away. It's weird. So when you get somebody like you or Chris saying, hey, I like your work, it means a lot to us.
Yeah, because it emotionally with the people around you, handlers, agents, managers, whatever, you could do the craziest special and get booked on two arenas tour, just stuff happening to you in the last few years. And then it's like, oh, yeah. Well, now we got to work on the next thing. You go, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I'm playing the Chase Center, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Can we toast? So can we just take a knee for a bit? Because the first time I got $1 million check or something in the 90s, it was like, all right, so that's that. I go, wait a minute. Can we just say a prayer?
Enjoy this?
You know, Dana used to tell me when I would talk about like gigs or if money was coming in, and he was saying, you know, when we go to the improv or you do these shows and sometimes they'll kick you $200 or, you know, you grew up getting cash. Like I drive to a gig, I get $20 in Arizona. Then I got older, I got like 75 for a gig. And then you get cash and sometimes you would do a whole week at a club and you get like $3,000 cash. But that meant so much. But now Dana was explaining, he goes, it's not as much fun with everything's a number on a monthly statement and just numbers are just moved around. You're like, does that mean anything? Like, I just want to have it in my hand. I don't really get it anymore. You don't get the feel.
No, I did Comedians in Cars.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Cold hard cash. Give me.
Jerry Seinfeld understands this. If you do the car show with him, he hands me an envelope. I won't say the amount. With all cash. And I felt like that was the highest paid thing I'd had in 30 years. I put it in a box. I used it for months, tips and things.
Feels real, yeah.
Here it is. And he goes, close the envelope. They're looking. It was the film crew. don't let them see it. Come on.
Let them look. Huh?
But anyway, Joe Coy is our guest today.
And now for a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Let's talk about hustle culture. You know the whole rise and grind, go big or go home thing. It's a lifestyle that may not be for you, but one that your money can handle thanks to Betterment. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. How? Their automated technology optimizes your investments again and again. With Betterment, your money is taking ice baths at 5 a.m. while you get your well-deserved rest. Your money downs protein smoothies and automatically reinvests your dividends all before you head out the door. Your money's a workaholic, but you don't have to be because you've got Betterment. The automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed. Let's tell Joe, because we know, obviously people know Joe Coy from all the stuff, but we do talk about SNL. We talk about comedy in general. But was there any time growing up, I don't know where exactly you were in the world, but do you remember seeing SNL and feeling like that was something that clicked with you?
Yeah, it was my life. It was everything. And from, you know, especially when they switched the hands over, when it slowly went over to the young guys, when it went to David and that whole
the best. So you were there. You were sort of in the Dennis Miller, love it. That's sort of when you started watching.
I go way back to Piscopo and Eddie
Murphy. Shit. Okay.
My dad was such a huge fan of SNL and SCTV.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there was another show called Fridays. I don't know if you guys
remember that. Remember that? Yeah, totally.
And then, of course, you know, Kids in the Hall that came, you know, that was later.
Oh, you saw it all. Yeah.
But it was just, I was so, like, in love with the freedom that you guys have with your sketches. Like, I loved sitcoms, but I love what you guys were doing with sketches. Like, I was just enjoying God, how do I say it? But you would get away with a lot. Like, now...
That's fun.
What we thought was risque back then is like G-rated now. It's nothing. But back then it was like, I can't believe they're doing this. Like,
right.
What?
Could like, you picture yourself, so, would you ever think that's something you'd want to do? Or when I watched SNL, sort of what you were saying about an escape earlier, I'm from a divorced family. I think we're all pretty beat up with childhoods and comedy in general. But I don't know if I realized it then, but maybe looking forward to Happy Days or sitcoms at night or this or watching SNL was an escape because it was fun, people having fun, and there was no problems.
Yes.
You know? It was all just, happy.
Yes. Church lady, just like or when you did Wayne's World, it was just like, what is this? You know what I mean? It was just like, I knew what public access was. And then you guys did a sketch on public access television. Right. And it was just like, this is crazy. Like, I was so in love with that idea. Like, it even made people think like, oh, well, then maybe I could do like a public access show. You know what I mean?
And, well, the emotional underpinning of that thing, because people have asked me and I've thought about it, is that the two kind of two guys in a town live with their parents, have an AMC Pacer, and they're like the happiest people in the town because they're ritualizing everything. So it's such a feel-good thing. I want to be Garth. I want to be the loyal best friend of the guy who's like Bugs Bunny. He's smarter than everyone in the town, you know? Yeah. So,
and you reflect really cool. people watching it because I'm like in a basement watching a show going, oh my God, that's like me and my stupid friend.
Yeah, exactly.
And so people watching go, that's cool. That's us.
That's so true. And that literally those two characters were at high, you know, they were in high school with me. I knew those two guys. And it's I also loved how the intro came on where it was that public access.
Yeah.
I
think it was Phil Hartman. Just, you're watching public access.
You are watching.
Yeah.
It was so good. And then like Spade, like everything that you did, man, with Farley and of course Sandler, it was just like this chemistry that you guys had was like, it was like friends. It was just like, it was like you were in on something, you know what I mean? And it was like this school. It was like, you felt like you were a fly on the wall. Is that the name of this? That is.
I think it is.
Yep. We give away prizes for people to say fly on the wall.
If you work it in. Yeah. Good job.
That's crazy. It's so crazy that I did
that. Let me get you a Rolex and a Gucci bag. Yes, I did research
you so
last night.
I appreciate that.
Because you earned it.
But no, I really felt like, oh, I'm watching something cool here. The way you guys would laugh, you know, break character every now and then, even though John didn't like it when people break character. John Lovitz would always say that. Yeah, sometimes they break character and I don't get it.
I don't like it.
I don't
and I
like
don't
it.
Get it.
It's not funny
it's
when they
balderdash.
Laugh at themselves.
It's not good acting.
Where did John Lovitz come from? Where did that
rhythm? He's like from 1930.
I know.
I'm trying to figure out, what is he laughing at?
He's always genuinely perplexed. What's so funny?
What's so funny?
You know why they didn't put the sketch on, don't you? Why? Because it's funny. They don't like it because it's too funny. It's a bit of Mae West almost and sort of a 1940s type announcer voice.
It's so funny.
Where did he come from? Yeah, he's the greatest.
And I always thought that was an act, you know, when he started doing stand-up at the Laugh Factory, I was like, oh, he's doing like this character that he really does on SNL. And then he called me. I didn't even know he got my number. He got Masada, and he called me and he goes, I'm going on tour and I want you to open for me. And I'm like, oh shit. He really talks like this.
Oh, wow. Did you do it?
You're
too funny. That's
a year.
That's a problem. You're
I
too
remember
funny.
Him talking about you. You know, he's opening for me, don't you? Coy. No. And I'm not even disagreeing. He goes, no, he's really funny. He's really going to be big, you know?
Oh,
that was sweet.
That's awesome.
I thought you were so strong that night, and John was still new to stand-up. It was almost like he had to pull up the socks a
little bit. It's hard to follow a polished, good act.
Yeah, because you were already into your you were a kick-ass stand-up. This is like the early Knots or something. I don't remember.
Knots.
2005.
Can I give you my favorite John Lovitz story?
Please. We would love nothing more. He's a friend of the podcast.
Okay, you're going to love this one.
Okay.
I'm opening for him in Hawaii.
He loves Hawaii.
That's the worst place.
I'm opening up for Hawaii, and he goes, let's go to the beach. I need a tan. Because he's got psoriasis, right?
I know. Yeah. Oh, he does.
I need to tan. Let's go to the beach.
Tan.
We go to the beach. And we're laying down. And this guy walks up to us, right? I don't know who he is. He's like an assistant or something. He goes, hey, John, KC from KC and the Sunshine Band is a huge fan of yours, but he's so scared to come up to you and talk to you. And he's performing on the island as well. Is there any way you can say hi to him? And John's like, of course, I love Casey and the Sunshine.
Of course,
Band.
Who doesn't, right?
So we walk up. This is the best story, man. And here's Casey. And he's like, hey, John, I really love you, man. I was just so nervous to say hi. And he goes, oh, I'm a huge fan of you. This is Joe Coy. You ready? Yeah. This is the first thing he says to Casey. This is Joe Coy. He does a really good impersonation of me. Take it away, Joe. And I go, what do you want me to say? He goes, exactly. It's perfect.
And that was it?
That was it.
We have to reboot. I mean, Lovitz, if Ted Sarandos is listening, maybe Joe, you could produce it, David. John Lovitz should just be in a cartoon as John Lovitz on Netflix, walking around doing exactly what you just said. I don't know.
So funny. I go, what do you want me to say? He goes, that's exactly what I want you to say. And I'm like, now I'm in a sketch with him.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Who's on first?
Told you.
Last time I saw him, he goes,
like me.
He goes, David, I'm sorry about your attitude. I heard about it. It's so funny, but he says, he always buys a new car. And he pulls up and he steps out of it and he goes, how can I get you in this car? He's trying to sell it to me.
You know, you little pixie, how are you? That's what he calls me. You little pixie, how you doing? Pixie. Yeah.
Oh, he's jealous. So funny, man.
God, he is funny as shit.
And he's got his
too.
Little dog, Jerry Bruckheimer, his trusty
his dog.
His dog
is not cute. I hate to break it to everyone. I tell him every
personality
time.
Is adorable, but the underbite
I like every dog
undercuts
and
him.
This,
yeah. I love all dogs. So, Joe.
Yeah, ask Joe a real question.
I want to ask. So, your mom is your biggest fan and really wanted you to go into show business or just got a sense? No.
Not at all. No. She wanted.
Fuck
she
Wikipedia.
No. So, she wanted, like, you know, Filipinos are, you know, have a lot of talent in the family. I don't know how this happens, but there's always a lot of talent. There's always a singer. There's always something, a dancer.
Yeah.
And the parents love to showcase that talent. And it's just like, whenever there's a party, it's like all the parents got their kids and they make them all perform. And they brag about it. It's like, it goes on for years. Like I was really good at impersonating Michael Jackson, but like the point where Michael Jackson wasn't even doing Michael Jackson anymore, but I was. Yeah. And she would make me impersonate Michael Jackson all throughout high school, and that she would brag about it. But the minute you get your diploma, it's like, okay, enough of the talent. Now you need to think about life.
I was about to say, where's the impression?
So a talent show for all your childhood, all the way through high school, and now that's over.
And that stopped. After high school, now you have to go to college. Think about your career. There's no such thing as becoming an entertainer. That there's no money to be made there, Joseph. And
wow.
And that's a reality, I swear.
It's pretty true, though.
It's very true.
She's not wrong.
The odds are stacked against us. But what was your response to that? I'll show you or what?
Yeah, I just, I was in love with stand-up. I couldn't get enough of it. I loved the, I knew I was going to be a comedian.
When did you get up on stage? What age were you?
18. Right out of high school in Vegas.
Oh, no, Joe. No.
No, Joe said, what are you doing?
My mom would kick the bed and go, did you give your applications out today? Did you walk out with the applications?
Yeah.
She goes, are you doing stand-up? You have to focus on something. I go, she goes, you go to Baskin Robbins? I go, I went and no one's hiring. Meanwhile, everyone's hiring. I go, she goes, go again. I don't believe you went. Go, show me your filled application. I go, gosh.
You were like Napoleon Dynamite?
In the day. Yeah,
what are you doing? Whatever I want. God.
Get out of here. This is my room.
Napoleon Dynamite. So 94, and you dreamed about it like as a little kid then, basically, like 9, 10, 11. You started to think about it.
I was in love with it at like 9, 10. And I saw Eddie Murphy at the Seattle Coliseum.
Oh, you were a Seattle
1987
guy?
At the Seattle Coliseum. I bought the tickets with my mom's credit card, and I went to that show, and I saw
live Eddie Murphy.
And what did that do to your brain when you saw Eddie up there?
I knew stand-up, usually the biggest would be a theater.
Yeah. Right?
Like, you know, you see Carlin in a theater, you see Robin in a theater.
Mm-hmm.
And then here I am in an arena where the Supersonics play. And I remember sitting in the seat with my friend and looking up at the 300 section going, wait a minute, what?
Like, there's people up there too.
This is a rock concert. This is Eddie Murphy, one guy
with a mic.
One man. It was crazy. And I don't know if you went to Raw, but there's the beginning of Raw, he stands behind this red screen, right?
It's a silhouette. I saw it in New York. Yeah.
Oh, you went to Raw? You saw
it? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You remember the beginning of that? It was all the highlights of what he's done.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turns red and he's standing behind it. And like, to explain that to kids now, it's unreal. Like, that's nothing. But in 1987, it was incredible. Like, my mind blew up. Like, I couldn't believe I just saw a reel like that with his body of work in front of me. And then now
he's right there.
And then he comes up. His confidence in your city is not explainable.
Yeah.
At 19 or 20, he's a fully born superstar on Saturday Night Live. I was a much longer journey. And so in your case, you got on stage. Could you tell us about your first night? Your first night going up.
My first night going up was...
Do you remember your first set?
Oh, yeah. I know exactly where the venue is. It's on Tropicana and Eastern in Vegas. And it was a talent show.
Yep.
I was 18. I had to grow. I remember it took me about 2 weeks to grow just a little bit of hair on my upper lip. And then I colored it in with my mom's little eyeliner thing and made it really dark. I swear, I looked like
one of the
Marx
Brothers. Was it a
21
and up place, or could you get in at 18?
Yeah, it was a bar.
So you had to pass for 21?
Yeah.
And you got a fake mustache.
I looked like one of the Marx Brothers, man. It was just like this obviously painted mustache.
Mm-hmm.
I went up, I bombed. It was so funny because when I wrote the routine, I thought for sure in my head what I was visualizing, me on stage, and like the bar manager calling someone from Hollywood, like, I think we found the next this kid's incredible. He's crushing right.
Holding the phone up.
Listen.
I'm telling you.
We don't have enough alcohol to serve the people. They bought the bar. Listen.
He's getting an encore for his 3-minute set.
Yes. He's doing 6 minutes instead of 3. This kid's unbelievable.
Three minutes was an eternity.
It was literally... Everything that I wrote disappeared in my head right when I got on stage. I forgot everything I wrote. And then I didn't want to get off stage. I just kept bombing for 3 minutes. The guy kept like, get off. I wouldn't get off.
Awful.
And then I did this stupid joke about a condom not fitting. You know, that's all I knew.
Because then, the size of the organ is too big or too small. If it doesn't fit.
Yeah, it's too small. Okay, but, you know, it's the obvious, right?
Got it.
Sure.
And then now my tongue is sticking to the roof of my mouth. And my mouth is dry, and I say to the crowd, I go, your mouth gets so dry, your tongue sticks to the roof of your mouth, and the lady at the bar goes, put a condom on it, and crushes.
So the crowd is crushing.
She
absolutely destroys the joke I bombed on. And then I walk off stage, sit down next to the guy that did Lionel Richie. He did a Lionel Richie song, and he sounded just like Lionel Richie. And I'm sitting right next to him. He won that night, by the way. And then literally he looked at me and he goes, hey, don't be too down on yourself. He goes, I just want you to know you had really good stage presence. That's what he said to me. And then and if he didn't say that to me, I probably would have quit comedy because it's so traumatic, honestly.
Wow.
Oh, wow. I had a similar situation. That's so true.
How was yours, Dave?
Well, just quickly, this is supposed to be about you, but whatever.
David likes to talk about himself.
I do. I'm going to go back 40 minutes before this story
I've only
starts.
Heard this 11 times, so I'm
no,
good.
What no, what it no, was no. was I did my, it was at Chuckles in Tempe, which Dana might have played. They always have funny names.
Chuckles,
and,
yeah.
I like when they call a Girls a Day comedians chuckle fuckers because it's the funniest term and I never had any. But there were zero chuckle fuckers there that night. Anyway, so I go on to do my three. And
three?
I go to my 3 minutes. They have to do 3 minutes. That's
three?
It. That's
you can end it right there. There were no chuckle fuckers that night. I was bored.
I should have opened up and go, where are my chuckle fuckers at?
Chuckle fuckers.
So I go and do three and I'm bombing. And then in between, like I did one about mustard and I go, I don't even know why I eat mustard anymore. And then I go, blah, blah, blah. And I do my, and so I get off completely bomb. And of course, some extra from the movie is like a, you know, skinny tie manager, but just, it's like whoever you run into a stage manager, but he just manages the bar. And I happen to walk over and stand next to him and he goes, that was tough. And I go, yeah. that's first time though. And he goes, yeah. And then he goes, ah, he's like looking away and he goes, actually, the stuff you say between the jokes is funnier. And then he walks away.
What?
And I go, wait a second. Mm. And that was that's my whole style for the rest of my life.
Things between the jokes. That's a comedy album.
Cause I would comment on what I just said to myself.
Yeah.
And then you get it. And then I thought, oh, it just made me think like, so there's something like you said. So there's something there.
Yeah. You should actually go back and give that guy some money.
He kept me going. Like you said, yours kept you going. Lionel Richie knockoff.
Yeah.
He kept you going. But that was nice. Anyone take a second?
But David, I hate to interrupt you, but that note right there on you is like, that's golden. I mean, stage presence, that's kind of like, okay, you look good on stage.
Generic. Crap,
but
yeah.
He saw you, generic. It's not generic, Dana. It was actually very good.
I agree.
He wasn't throwing that around everyone.
It's just stage presence. It's
he
a
didn't say
vague.
It to Lionel Richie for sure. No, but that note on you is that's a great note because that is you. That's your whole act. It's like, I think... Every time you just say on your whatever's on your mind, David, is so funny, man. It's like spot on. It's always been you. So
but it made me think, like, what is he talking about? And then the longer, you know, like you get it now, and we all understand that that's even in movies. I was sort of what I was in Coneheads, my first or second movie, and they had me just with Michael McKean, and I would just kind of repeat what he said or say something back under my breath, and he would keep talking. And I go, that is kind of it, because sometimes the joke you're going for that you think is the big one, and then you say something after, like a tagline is funnier, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So whatever, that guy, that just made me think of it, because your guy said something to you, and we were talking to Nick Kroll, where he had his audition for SNL, and then a random stage manager said something, but it threw him. And that's just someone doesn't realize this is such a big moment in your life. And they're just saying something randomly, but you remember it. Look at this. Years later, we both remember.
Nice. I like that.
True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. Now, you're out there. You have acres and acres, hundreds of acres. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. No. Weed control, which you hate. Fertilization. Mm-hmm. Aeration.
Huh? Can't stand it.
Among others. They'll do all that. So you can do literally anything else. Dana's out there like Yellowstone. You have better things to do in your free time. I know you do. You don't want to focus on lawn care.
True Green is too good to be true, is what I'm saying. But it is true. Right, David? Because you're going to have more time to do things that you want to focus on.
All the hard work. And it gets you to a great lawn. That's what you want. You take care of everything else you got to do in your life. You're very busy. Let True Green take care of this one thing. Get it off your plate.
You know what? I do have some space. I want to put some grass down. I'll call you later, True Green.
Talk to True Green. Where can listeners purchase or learn more? You go to truegreen.com. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour.
Whoa.
They offer a satisfaction guaranteed, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. That is such a cool thing.
Good job, True Green. You're nailing it.
Hmm.
I had to learn.
Que pasa?
Oh, hey.
Que pasa?
Is that what they say when you walk into sushi?
I think that's what's happening in Spanish. ¿Qué pasa? ¿Qué pasa? David Ospero.
I had a difficulty learning German in high school. It's a very tough language. I did it through textbooks and a teacher. I would have rather had Rosetta Stone.
You know, you not being able to learn German is very, very interesting.
But stupid. Now, Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program. We know this. Available on desktop as an app. Truly immerses you in the language you want to learn.
Yeah, this is planning a trip to Italy. And I think Rosetta Stone is my ticket to speak a better language.
Hey,
I want a pizza pie. But I'll be saying it in Italian. Hey, I want a pizza pie. Sounds like
that's better
English, but it's still that was
they
Italian.
Say, do you want to sound perfectly fluent, or do you want to sound like Ratatouille?
Honestly, trusted experts for 30 years, David, with millions of users and 25 languages offered. You want to hear some?
Yeah, the
Spanish,
big ones.
French. Oh, Spanish, French, Italiano, German, Korean, Chinese, Javanese.
Careful.
Dutch, Arabic, Polish.
Fast language acquisitions. Rosetta Stone.
Should I read that straight?
It immerses you in many ways. No English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and you think in the language, Dana. That's yes. The hard part.
No, I do like their process. The intuitive process picks up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's designed for long-term retention, David, because we all took Spanish in high school, and all we can say is donde está la biblioteca.
Yeah.
I can find a library, but nothing else. Rosetta Stone is a game changer.
It's like having
David.
A personal trainer for your accent. It's convenient. We said the desktop, the app options, audio mm-hmm. companion, you can do it offline. It's amazing value. Lifetime membership has all 25 languages mm-hmm. for any and all trips and language needs in life. That's lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. That is wow. a steal. I'll say that in English, a steal.
Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Fly on the Wall listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
Visit rosettastone.com/fly. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/fly today.
Let's talk about how you got to get to these five superstar specials, and you have one out now. Live from the LA Forum.
Yeah.
The Forum.
Which is what?
Well, 15, we can't even talk about that. 15,000
seats or something? 12,000?
I did. You're not going to believe this. I sold it out four times. And
I don't believe this.
Yeah, it's crazy, right?
That's
so crazy.
Did they pay you a lot of money?
Well, you know, I do all my promotion myself. So my promotion team, we go into these venues.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's where the money's at. You got to do it yourself. Especially when it's at that level, you don't want to go in as a paid act. You lose money that way.
Really? I don't even understand
this. When you take in on all the risk, yeah, you're going to make more when you do it that way.
I played the Forum, Dana, and what happened is it wasn't selling, and so we curtained it off, so it only held about 200. But if you have all the curtains up and everything, it's still, you can say it's the Forum.
I played the bar. I played the bar at the Forum. They put a little stage in the corner. It was about 45 people. But I four-walled the whole thing because it's the only
Live
way to make
the
money.
Forum Club.
But Joe, so where did you get this business acumen? Because they said, my research on you, is that you couldn't get a Netflix special.
Yeah.
So you said, I'm going to produce one in Seattle. I'm going to take pretty much all my savings, put into it, produce it, I guess, at quality that you would know they would accept. And then you sold it to Netflix.
Yeah.
Very rare.
And I hate to interrupt you, Dave.
No, that's all I wanted to say. Do it.
But not only did they say no to me, they said no to me the whole year. This is the year that they were going to make original specials, right? They weren't going to license anymore. They were going to make it, and they made this huge announcement that they were going to do a special every week, and they were going after everybody, you know, but they didn't even approach me, and I was like, I didn't get it because I was killing on the
road.
You
were doing well,
like,
right? Yeah,
yeah, and I just like this hour is hot, like, and I kept inviting them to come watch the new hour. They never came, and then finally, like, they just said we're going to go ahead and pass, and I was like, what? And then they go, our calendar's full and we already got everybody, but we'll look at you next year for the year after that. And I'm like, I need to get on now. I'm 45. Yeah. Like I don't have three more years. No, I need to do this now. So I was like, screw it. I'll shoot it myself. And we were going to do a small scale, but I'm like, if we do a small scale, then it's going to look like I shot it myself. I mean, if I want them to buy it from me, it's got to look like they paid for it. So we went big and I did it in Seattle at the Moore Theater. And I put on every single hat, man, Dana. I did all my research. I scouted my directors. I did everything. And here's the best compliment I can give anybody, and it's to you, Dana.
Really?
Because
I'll take it.
I studied everyone's specials. Yours too, David. I studied everyone's special. The one you did in Phoenix was so amazing.
Oh, that old one. Yeah, the HBO one. Yeah.
I love that one. And then, so I would study because I was trying to figure out what my stage should look like. I wasn't looking at it for the content. I was looking at it like the set design, the light design,
sure,
how they light up the audience, you know, where smart, they place the cameras. And the one special that made my mouth drop was your special, Dana, because
which one?
it's the one in
Santa Rosa,
Santa Barbara, Santa Rosa,
incredible theater.
Yeah. Well, one, you crushed it, but your sound was the best sound.
Wow!
Out of every single special that I've seen, and I think I watched 100 specials, and that's the one I told my director, I told my sound guy, and I told everybody. I go, can you please watch Dana's? Because I don't know what he did, but it doesn't sound like anyone else's special. I go, it sounds like I'm in the audience with him laughing.
That
like,
is it's cool. So interesting you bring that up, because now I'm remembering that I was disappointed in the sound when I heard the first cut. And I did, because I get possessed sometimes about things. So I actually did get in the room with them. And I said, I wanted I Love Lucy sound. Can I get I Love Lucy sound? Because you can hear the individual laughs. And so they worked with me. And I never had got direct feedback from anyone till now about the sound on that thing. Because I don't watch it again. I'm too self-conscious. But I remember it was a thing, really frustrated. Because in the old days, they'd have the one mic down there. And then it would create this thing. You know, like Cosby early comedy albums. Just so crackling. And then they have all these mics, and so they had to turn some of the mics up, but they did work on it. And so the fact that you've mentioned it now made my day this many years later, because I really, really worked on that.
Said that.
Did you get it?
That's
Joe?
Amazing.
Did you get the sound?
Did you copy it, or what did you do to get it?
What you just said is what I heard, and I didn't hear in any other special, because whenever I watch any other special, I would just hear audience laugh.
Just a roar.
But yours was so like, I was like, dude, I can hear everyone. Like, I'm hearing everyone. It's so full in there. Mm-hmm. And I go, what did he do? And my sound, we ended up miking the entire audience all the way up to the roof.
Mm-hmm.
I bought so many microphones. And when you watch live from Seattle, and it's so funny because people go, oh, did he add laughter? And I'm like, no, asshole, I added microphones.
You don't just hear the front
light
row.
Up the balcony, and you don't hear that laugh. You're just getting the floor, or you're getting boom mics on the front of the stage and only getting the first five rows.
Yeah.
I got every single seat in that special, and that's why it sounds like that. And it's from your special.
God, did you always have this drive? Because like you're shrewd, you're clever, you're driven. I mean, at age 45,
well,
that's
your
when
one
you
shot.
Kind of broke. I mean, you were, broke as a nationwide figure, world figure, really, because you were doing really, really well. But then that first special live in Seattle, you went up like a rocket. You went to Hawaii and you were selling 20,000 or you just blew up.
I broke. Yeah, that was crazy. After that special, it was over.
So that was it. So there was a change. Sorry, Joe. So that comes out. You sell it to Netflix.
Yeah.
And then it comes out. And how long does it take? It starts sinking in where you're like, the gigs are filling up and you go, well, we might have to move to a bigger venue instead of a club. Or you start selling out a club three nights, four nights, and you go, shit, I bet we could do 2,000 seats.
But I hate to say this, Dana and David, don't get mad at me when I say this.
No, we love to hear success stories.
No, I might get mad.
Go ahead.
But before Live from Seattle, and this was my frustration with Netflix. I was breaking records at the Improvs. I was selling like 30 shows out in a row,
like
20 shows out in a row.
400 seaters, big improv.
Yeah. And I would literally have to stay in a city for 3 weeks.
to satisfy your fan base.
Joe, I'm not mad. I'm so embarrassed.
I knew you were big. I just knew that.
I would be like at the Irvine Improv, which is a huge one, and they go, Gabriel Iglesias is here for the last week. And I'm like, the last week? And there's acts like this, like Joe, and they were smoking out on the road, and you go, holy shit, you know? So that's more discombobulating of why Netflix or any streamer doesn't just say, we got to get this guy, bottle it, and throw it on our place and take credit for him.
Yeah, that drove me crazy. I have a plaque on the wall at the Irvine Improv. It's like 100 sold out shows. I'm like,
it's unreal. That place is hard to fit. That's big.
Did you just get a small apartment down there, or did you
literally
Jokoy Improv?
You have to live any club you play. You have to rent an apartment. Because how did you sell out Seattle? Was that how big was that theater? Was that easy to sell out for you?
I just did the more, I think.
Yeah, I did the more, and for the taping, I just sold two shows out on the same day, just for the taping.
Yeah,
and it did make sense to me that they weren't giving me the special, and then after the special aired, that's when we noticed that instead of selling out like shows out in like 2 months in advance, it was selling out the whole calendar year. It was gone. My whole calendar year was completely sold out. We were like, okay, wait
That's
a minute.
Amazing.
Wow.
We're like, wait a minute. So the whole calendar year, so let's add a show. And then we would add a theater, and then that would sell out. And then we go, all right, let's try Hawaii. Let's just do two shows in Hawaii. And that sold out in like a minute, like literally like 1 minute. And then we added a third minute. And then now the news is getting involved. Joe Coy is coming to Hawaii.
Wow.
And the computers are coming down and all this stuff. And then adding another. And it ended up being like 12 shows in a row. It was like 24,000 tickets. And I broke Mariah Carey's record. It was like the craziest thing.
Wow.
They moved to the Big Island because it was the biggest island that could hold everybody.
Yeah. I was in a volcano. I performed inside of a volcano.
Thanks. I'm playing a dinghy off of Kauai.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then you just started.
And that's when we knew that. It
but
was
that's
different.
A big moment in your life that you can't ever get again. You go, holy shit, I'm selling out. I was doing improvs where I would do, and honestly, I'm not really as known as a stand-up because I do. I'm an international star in other areas, and just got to get that in there. No, but I do other stupid shit. So, but when I go to stand-up, I'd always do it as something between a movie or a TV show. And so I would go to the Irvine Improv.
Hold on. Yeah. What is the other thing?
I don't know what else I do.
I thought you were just stand-up.
No, I do other shit.
Movies. He was in, what was the one with Sandler? Do-Over on Netflix with Adam.
I did benchwarmers. So
you're what it,
so when you're doing
He's
stuff,
an international icon.
And you go to a club, and then you remember Joe, like, and Dana knows. This year is the first year I'm doing a theater tour because when your eye's not on the ball and you're not a stand-up 1,000% of the time, I'm just like, hey, I have these 2 weeks off. Is it too late to call like Irvine Improv I love? Or can I go do wherever club? And they go, okay, and we figured out. And we fill them up, but it's not any records, but it's just, we fill them up and I go, great. And then after all this time, I go, is there any like a theater I can do? So I just do one show instead of more.
Yeah.
And then they go, yeah. And then I realize like Nikki Glaser and Theo Vaughn and, you know, Segura and Christ, all these people are filling up theaters and Nate Bergazzi. And I go, and you, and I go, and you're doing even bigger ones, but I go, I got to get in that mix. Like, why am I still doing clubs? And they go, oh, well, if you want, we can do a whole theater. I go, yes. What? I've spent 5 years too long. Just, they go, but you got to focus and you got to do like 40. You got to start with 40 in a row so they can set it up and you book the gig and you put a hold on the theater, all that shit. So I'm just like floored that you were way ahead of the game on that. You're like getting, go bigger, 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 bigger.
Joe Coy leaped to theaters at 45.
Printing
so what
money,
age did you leap to theaters, David? I never.
Just now. Just in the
so
last year.
So many. It seems like we had John Mulaney on our show, and he was very humble and in awe of the fact that he's doing, you know, Madison Square Garden four nights in a row. And you're how many are there of you that can do
that
one,
big.
Two, three arenas? Like you did the Chase Center twice. What I mean, there's Mulaney, there's Bill Burr, there's you.
Yeah, Bill
there's
Burr
a very
does,
select
yeah.
group of arena comics right now, right? I mean,
yeah, I think it's crazy too that like, where the arenas are as well, right? Like,
right,
it's like you know, where like I'm doing two now. I'm doing two San Francisco, two San Diego arenas, two
Seattle.
Seattle, yeah. No. Well, I did Seattle. I did the Climate Pledge where, you know, I saw Eddie Murphy at. And then now I'm doing Tacoma Dome, which is 40 minutes down the street. And that's 18,000 people. And
wow.
And it's just in the same calendar year. And it's just like, and it's also the placement, like where, like I'm in Chicago doing the United Center. I'm doing FTX Arena in Miami.
It's like, I like you do another one for the people that don't want to drive 8 minutes.
Yeah.
So, you know, it'd this, be kind of this, fun. David, we'll just basketball. Pitch this to Joe. It'd be fun to hang out with you now. We could be your openers or whatever. And next time you're playing like a some giant arena. No, I'm just kidding. No,
you know, arenas are, but Joe, when, arenas
would
aren't
love
they
for
tough?
You to come out, please.
What
that if, would be
you wouldn't
incredible.
Have to, you wouldn't have to pay me. I would just wave and go, I'm almost 80. Good night. But what?
I wouldn't even put you on the flyer. If you walked out, that would be incredible. You too, David. I wouldn't put you on the flyer or tell anybody. If you walked out, it would be insane.
I would love to just get applause and leave.
Yeah.
That's all I want.
You know what? You love Irvine so much, David. I'm doing two Honda centers, like coming up right away, right?
Fucking Honda center. That's Anaheim, yeah.
Anaheim. I'm doing two Honda centers where the Ducks play.
Maybe I'll bop down.
I was watching, before I knew we had you on the podcast, so I was watching your Hawaii one, coming in hot.
Yes.
And I don't know. I mean,
Dane is reading it.
No, I wanted to say, I got them written here, 2017, 2019, 2020. Yeah. I mean, the amount of specials in a compressed period of time, but you're at a top, you're at a high level, Joe, as a pure stand-up.
Do you not want to flip your jokes around, though? Like, when I started, Joe, we would see like Denny Johnson, there's comics I thought were great, Dana knows all these guys. You could travel, and this is not a knock to them, because it's just the way it is. You could do 10 years with your same hour.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I
and just travel different cities. And that's someone who's just getting lazy, honestly, and just saying, this works. I have a job. This is my job to do this hour. And they just do it. And they come back to that city 2 years later, but different people come. But nowadays, when you do a special, and then where are you on? I think I know where you fall on this, of flipping an hour to a completely new hour. Do you repeat stuff they love, or how do you do it?
No, I don't. Once it's on Netflix, it's done. I'll never.
You
do
throw
it
in the fucking garbage. That's
and then
tough
you get
to
a
do,
whole new
it?
Hour. You got to go whole to clubs hour. To work the
no,
hour.
No, I work them in between the sets. So I'm on tour and I'm already like I shot that special in March. I was already working on that before I shot it.
Okay.
So I had the hour in the bag, and I was already working on a new hour before I shot that hour, and now I have a new hour.
Well, let me ask you a question, which I'm fascinated by. Like, the idea of confidence, and you're like, okay, you're floating around. You could look back and go, maybe I was 88% confident. But now when you go out there, after these specials are out, you're kind of, I don't know what other word to use, like a superstar level or something, because you've got, your name is 100 feet high behind you, which I think is really cool.
Like Eddie
cool.
Murphy, yeah.
And you're coming out and they love you so much, but I was watching your technique and your commitment, your theatricality, and you're sitting on the stool, you're doing a Vietnamese character. You're so in the pocket. Do you feel like you're the most confident on stage you've ever been, or can you get more confident than where you're at?
Cause dude, I want to cry right now.
Oh, good.
Just that Dana's studying your special.
Oh, I just enjoy it. And I called my son, who's a huge fan of yours. And I just saw it. And I don't watch a lot of stand-up, but I go, this guy is at the top, tippy top of what a stand-up can be. I'm being sincere. God. I'm just being honest. I love you, man.
That was awesome. Man, you don't know what that means to me right now.
But it's kind of true, right?
You're up there. Thank you, man.
You're never at a point with these crowds because they're all there to see you. Like, first of all, it is like an Eddie Murphy thing. So you must freak out that you know what it's like to sit in that crowd and get excited. Someone's coming out you want to see and everyone's there and you come out, lights go down, they get all excited. That is fun. And was there any transition? Because when we went out with this Sandler tour, we played some bigger venues and it is a little different as far as some of my jokes are very throwaway. And the bigger it gets, I started playing bigger and I had to be careful of like, I don't want to change things too much because it's just, they sort of, they wouldn't listen as much if I went too long telling a story or too long.
No,
where
it's
they
hard
want
to
it.
Be in a big
They're so excited.
Big place.
They're like a music crowd, you know, they want some fucking action.
Yeah, that would be difficult. Joe, you have a lot of dynamics, Joe. When you get him rolling, then I see you sit down and you get
he's
very
got voices
intimate.
And he moves.
But then you're going to go explosive and you know, it's just fun to watch. I'm just happy for it. It's fun to be confident on stage because then it just, yeah. That second voice gets out of your head and you're just in the flow.
Yeah. And I tell like other comics that I take on the road, that's the one note I say. It's so crazy you're saying all this stuff to me. One, the second voice, I always tell them, trust it. Mm-hmm. Like, trust your gut. You know, just like what David said about the stuff you say in between, it's like, yeah. that's what you bring to the stage. And like, I don't care if I already have a set ready and we're about to shoot it. If it comes to me at that moment, I'm saying it. I don't care. And if it fails, it fails. And I'm going to stay confident. I'm going to stay in the pocket.
Yeah.
And I want to commit completely. And when I become my mom on stage, or if I become my son on stage, I become them on stage. Mm-hmm. I always trust my gut. That's why I'm not scared to like drop the hour. I don't care. Like, I really don't.
It's worked enough. And you got a feel for it. You're like in a rhythm of like, cause you're, if something's not right or it's not working, it's not going to make the hour. Cause you in your head are going to go, that's not strong enough. I got to get rid of it.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. I never want to be in that zone that I've seen certain comics. Cause like you said, when I used to go and watch comics all the time at the clubs, and I would see a comic that would come back a year later and they're doing the same act. And that would always frustrate me. Cause I'm like, I would never do that. I'm like, I would never, ever do that. It's just, like, I don't.
That was just a thing back then. Cause there was no specials really. And then, I mean, the first specials I remember were Raw. I remember, Young Comedian specials with Rodney or something, or Jim Carrey. And I was like, holy fuck, Sam Kinison blew my mind, all that shit.
Kinison.
And Jim Carrey, obviously. And then you started to see, like, when I got my HBO special, maybe there was, I don't even think I knew back then it was a really big deal, but I knew it was a big deal, but there was probably like 4 or 5 a year, you know? So those resonated, like the early, like when we were on SNL, especially Dana, a little farther back, that's one of the only game in town where you get to go, oh, here's comedy. And when you get an HBO special, it's only the networks and HBO. And that's really almost it. Maybe MTV. Now there's 3,000. So it's very hard to make an impact. So if you can cut through as a stand-up where you are and still get to everybody and have these things mean a lot, and just keep on a rotation, like new material, it's unreal.
I kind of am in awe of people who can write really great jokes. Like Dennis Miller, when he does a special, he's got to have, you know, 200 really great one-liners, you know? Yeah. And if you have a theatrical bent to you and you can extend a rhythm with your son or your mom, there's just, that's more like jazzy. And all of a sudden you got 10 minutes because you're following yourself down this thought. Yeah. About a character.
And they follow with you.
But that being said, it's really hard to get a great hour that works every year. That's just a lot of work.
It is.
And commitment. You know?
Yeah, it is. I think the first two were easy with me with Netflix because I waited so long for a special that I already had the two hours ready right back to back.
Wow.
And now this one, after this one dropped, now I'm like, okay, I gotta dig deep in the bag right now for this one.
But do you stress out or do you go, I want to wait and then maybe wait 2 years for the next one or I don't know.
This is your fourth.
Yeah.
In 5 years.
How close were the first two? First one comes out, it's a hit.
17.
So it changes things. So how fast do you go? I'm putting another.
It was like, I think it's a year and a half.
And they call you and say, now we want to do one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They call me a year after, but I was ready right away because, you know, I
you were like, here it is
right away. Yeah. I was like, here's a zip drive. I'm just going to do the stuff that didn't make the first one. So,
that's the stuff Jay Leno always said. You know, these guys come on the Tonight Show and they got 7 minutes and they do it. And then they ask them to come back and they don't even have another seven. You know, you got to go back to back. That's what you do. You know, you never record your act because then people know your act. Reality TV has hit a new high on Hulu. From executive producer Jimmy Kimmel, the all-new Hulu original series High Hopes is finally here for your viewing pleasure.
The Hulu original reality series follows two budding entrepreneur brothers and their hilarious half-baked employees at one of the fastest-growing cannabis dispensaries in Hollywood. This workplace comedy showcases the highs and even more highs of the competitive marijuana industry.
More than just coworkers, the owners and Bud Tenders in High Hopes are one dope family.
You'll fall in love with these quirky characters as they pursue career aspirations, love, and fame, all under a slightly hazy cloud.
All episodes of the new reality series High Hopes are now streaming only on Hulu.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/wall to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/wall. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Well, an hour is hard to come up with. I mean, when I did it first, Joe, I got to do one with Carson, and I was going over my set, and I had like an audition set I would do at the Improv, you know, to get stuff. And yeah, then I think Brad Gray and Mark Gervitz, my managers, I go, I don't want to do this joke because I want to save that for my second one. And they go, you fucking don't save shit. You bomb, you're not coming back. Give everything you got. And then if you don't have anything, you bust your ass to get more, but don't save anything. And so I did every best joke I had the first time.
Gentleman joins us. He's out of Las Vegas and has made quite a splash on the comedy scene. Please welcome Joe Coy, everybody.
I just wanted you to have that experience in case you never had it.
Yeah, that was incredible.
Oh, wait, I have a question about Easter Sunday, Joe. Just for the people at home, I've done
Joe's movie.
Some are very, very hard to get off the ground. Is it one of those that was easy, or is it, people don't know how hard it is just to get a movie going. Was it harder or easier?
Okay, here it comes. Okay. Coming in Hot comes out, right?
Yep.
Okay.
My second special comes out.
Yep.
We get a call from Amblin.
Wow.
Spielberg. So I go into Amblin thinking that it's a general, right? It's a general meeting.
Spielberg's
yeah.
company.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So I go into Amblin. Me and my manager, we think it's just a general meeting. Right when we walk in, someone goes, Steven can't stop talking about your special.
Wow. I'm
like, oh, okay. Thank you. And I hug. And then next person, yo, Steven loves you. Next person, Steven can't stop talking about Steven this, Steven that, Steven that. Then I get to the meeting with Holly and Jeb, the two execs over there. And they're like, Steven loves your special. And then I swear I do this joke all the time, but I'm like, are you mean Steven from accounting, right? Cause there's no way it's Mr. Spielberg. You're talking about Steven from accounting. So it's a Filipino,
which is still good.
And they're like, no, it's Mr. Spielberg. He loves you. And he wants to do a movie with you. Do you have an idea? And I pitched Easter Sunday, which was something that was already with, you know, another producer, a great producer named Dan Lin. It was in the works, but we just didn't have anything attached to it. So I pitched that in the room and they bought it in the room.
Wow.
And wow. Literally like six. Oh, then the pandemic hit. So everything shut down. So I thought, oh, there goes my dream that I've been waiting for. And they called me and like, hey, don't worry. It's going to open back up and we're still making this movie. And the minute Vancouver opened up, we were already filming. We hit the ground.
Oh, great.
We were already shooting. And it was all because of Steven.
Wow.
Yeah, he does cut through butter a little bit more than most people. It's harder to get.
And he only made two movies. It was Jurassic World and Easter Sunday, and he released them at the same time in the summer.
He released against himself? So you're...
It was just such a compliment. Nothing better than going to see Jurassic World with my son, and my trailer is running before.
Oh, wow, wow.
Wow.
It was all because of Steven. He's incredible.
What a thrill.
Yes.
Any more questions, David?
No, that's it. Joe is great. Joe, thank you, buddy.
David?
Yeah.
Joe will be playing the State of Arizona December 2nd. There's a stage 40 miles south of Prescott,
ladies and
gentlemen. He's playing the Grand Canyon. He plays Canada one night only. He's in Saskatchewan on a vertical chopper's gonna hang him up. Anyway, Joe, congratulations on all your success, and you're inspiring. Your focus and love of stand-up and the level you've gotten at is very, very cool.
Well,
and
we're not going to end it on that note.
No, we're not. What about Chelsea Handler? What about Chelsea?
We're going to end it on this note.
Okay.
What's your note?
We're going to end it on this note.
Okay.
Thank you, Dana, and thank you, David, for what you guys do on stage. Because if it wasn't for you two, there would not be any of these comics that you see now. Not just me. All of them.
You guys did it
before anybody else, before TikTok, before Instagram. You guys were the dogs that paved the way for us, and you were the best of the best, man. Like, you inspired me. You made a little kid that was going through a lot when he was a child smile.
And I remember I heard when you were 7 years old. 7 years old, he was only selling out 400 seaters. That's so sad. That's so sad to hear.
That was a sad time. I don't even like talking about those times.
Only little tiny theaters. Joe, we appreciate it, buddy, and I'll see you out there, and I might see you at the Honda Center.
I love you. And Dana, please.
We're going to show up at one of your gigs and just say hello backstage right before you are about to go on and go on a long story about you on our podcast. No. We'll see you around campus, but nice to see you again, and I teared up a little bit. You teared up a little bit. David, did you break water?
I stayed normal.
You stayed normal.
Okay. I'm known for being
David,
tough.
David, say you teared up.
Teared up a little bit
when
I realized I'm still playing clubs.
His nickname is Teardrop. He doesn't tell you that very often. Okay, Teardrop, nice to see you.
Bye, Joe Coy.
Love you guys.
Peace out.
That was so cool.
This has been a podcast presentation of Cadence 13. Please listen, then rate, review, and follow all episodes. Available now for free wherever you get your podcast.
No joke, folks.
Fly on the Wall has been a presentation of Cadence 13, executive produced by Dana Carvey and David Spade, Chris Corcoran of Cadence 13, and Charlie Finan of Brillstein Entertainment.
The show's lead producer is Greg Holtzman, with production and engineering support from Serena Regan and Chris Basil of Cadence 13.